Hurkun oku trap sonsun. Trap sonsun. Trap sonsun trap donsun. Түүний сонсдог хөгжим дур булаа. Дадаж дуудан дур булаа мууруулаа.
Hey, Rose the Podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. I'm here with Toothless Tom Galicchio. I am at the Pechanga Casino. I want to thank our sponsor, Speedweed. Listen, people, time to get high. If you want to get high, there's only one place to do it, and that's LA Speedweed. Okay, they deliver everything. They deliver marijuana, edibles, vapes, whatever, CBD oil. I'm telling you, my back is killing me. I rub this stuff on my back. It's better than any aspirin or Bayer or anything else I've taken. And you get money off. If you use roasted, you get 10% off, $10 off, $100 or more. And you know, Jeff Sessions is outlawing marijuana as we speak, or trying to. So get it now. Store up, stock up. Pretend it's like a world war, and you got to stock up. And you know, because you never know when you're gonna get able to get marijuana again. So speedweed.com. These guys rule. My friend Gino, he runs it. Trust me on this one. If you need to get high or you want to just feel better about yourselves, speedweed.com. So here we go. I'm here with Toothless Tom Galicchio, one of my favorite people ever. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, Adam. I'm doing good. I'm going to call up Speedweed after you just put that advertisement out. That was a hell of a promo. Do they deliver out here to Temecula?
They do. They do. They absolutely do. Now, I'm looking at you, Tom. You have like a bionic arm right now. It looks like your left arm has a huge brace. What happened?
Well, it actually happened in my last fight. I don't know if you saw my last fight.
I was there.
Oh, good. Lucky you. So, I got my ass kicked pretty bad last fight, and somewhere within that ass kicking, my bicep tore. Now, it affected nothing of the outcome. It's just more of a testament to how good James Krause beat the shit out of me that night.
Listen, that fight, I was at that fight, and you were the people's champ in that fight. Everyone in the crowd was rooting for you. Everybody was, nothing against James Krause, but you definitely, it was like Rocky in that fight, but Krause had you on the feet, but people knew if you got him to the ground, things, and you almost got him in the first round. How close were you in that first round to getting him down?
I was pretty close in the first one, but he did his homework. I mean, he's a high-level black belt as well, and it was close, but he made some quick adjustments to keep my, I guess, leg from getting in, and I kind of missed out on a few crucial things to really get the submission, but, you know, it was definitely threatening. I almost thought I had it in the bag.
He actually sort of smiled afterwards during the fight. He looked at you like, you almost got me. Now, was it hard? And you guys are friends. And I know James Krause. He's one of those dudes that, like, if you have a daughter, you'd want him to date your daughter. Just seems like a real respectable guy, but kind of a by-the-books guy. No bullshit, no nonsense. You get what you see, and you see what you get. It's just sort of like, he seemed like a real good guy. Was it hard to fight a guy like that?
Well, it's not hard to fight him, because I wanted to get in the UFC, and by any means necessary, I found no problem to fight him and come at him like a banshee, but I got to actually give him a little credit. He fought everybody in the room, Krause. His Ramsey was on the top bunk, and then me and Jesse Taylor in the other two bunks. So Krause fought everybody in the room, so he probably had no problem putting it aside. I wanted to win, and I wanted to get that UFC win, so I had no problem punching him in the face.
Now, he was definitely had the advantage in striking. Now, you took that fight on what, 2 days' notice?
No, we knew about it. I had a feeling I was going to get called up. You know, there's no excuses to be made. I just got my shit pushed in. I took more open shots to the mouth than a $2 hooker in Vegas.
So if you now, if you knew you were fighting him again, like, what would you do differently?
You know what? I could have worked my wrestling a little more. I was a little gun shy out there. I mean, you know, I had to put in more volume, and I would have definitely done the camp a little bit differently and just gone back to my roots and wrestled a lot more.
Speaking of Jesse Taylor, so Jesse won the Ultimate Fighter. He's your teammate. Then he gets popped for, I don't know, explain to me what happened.
Apparently, this is what he told me, and I've never seen Jesse do anything, so as far as I know, he's innocent in my eyes. He took some supplements from some witch doctor, and then it had had some sort of female fertility drug in it that's on the ban list. So I don't know if he's just trying to pull a Fallon Fox over there or
wait. What? Why is he going to witch doctors?
He's a California guy. You know how you get, these California cats are. They believe in everything holistic and good vibes. Vibes don't make it out to the tri-state area. I learned about vibes when I moved to Southern California.
So he went to some lady who's like basically said like some kind of earthy lady.
Yeah, some sort of herbal doctor who believes in home. And he made some sort of supplement, probably out of his bathtub or, you know, like how we used to fill those glass bottles with the sand. He was probably doing that with supplement.
What a disaster. The guy got kicked out of the Ultimate Ultimate Fighter, you know, because he was way too immature for that. Does a redemption season, wins the whole thing. I was rooting for him, beats Diego Lima, beats James Krause, beats Lima pretty badly, actually.
Yeah.
And then gets popped. And I'm like, oh, it's definitely one of those like where you just like biff yourself like, fuck.
Apparently it was very trace amounts, and he went to this doctor before he was even out for the show.
Oh,
so it's been some time. They said it was trace amounts, and we've been tested to get on the show.
So how long is he out for?
I think he's coming up soon. I think it was like 9 months. And okay, then he'll be back.
Okay,
he'll be back, and he'll do the same thing we always see Jesse do. He always fights the same way, like from the first Ultimate Fighter to this way. He'll still be doing that.
Did you have a feeling he was going to win it?
I definitely knew he was one of the top competitors, especially with Gerard Harris being out, which actually I took Gerard's spot.
Right.
Yeah, I was an alternate. Me and actually Justin Edwards were alternate. So I knew Jesse was a tough matchup. Although something interesting, I think Jesse's toughest matchup would have been Joe Stevenson or somebody who is
really
grapply off their back. Yeah, he's been caught by guys off of his back, you know, the guy being who could get up a quick arm bar or something. So I think Joe or somebody non-traditional would have been his tougher matchup, whereas he would have smashed the other higher ranked guys. Right. In it.
Yeah, I took a break from the Ultimate Fighter until this season, and I really really enjoyed this season because I knew everybody. It wasn't like I was, and I really liked it. I ran into Junie Browning. He came to a comedy show. He said he was almost up for it too.
Yeah, he was out there with us. We did. I went to an open mic after that, and Junie came with me. Junie and Medi, and I did an open mic at some bar in Vegas. Whereas like me and one other white guy, and the rest of them were rappers, and it was just me and other white guy in collared shirts doing comedy in the middle of this bar.
And Junie actually, I mean, you know, he came to the show. He was super nice, respectful. I fucked with him a little bit in the crowd. And then afterwards, I mean, he was very hard on himself. He was saying how he still thinks everyone hates him. And he obviously came across like an asshole and this and that. You know, he had definitely has not let that go. But he seemed like he was in a pretty good place, especially, relative to where he was at.
He's a good guy. That was my only time meeting him. Actually, when he walked into the room, I didn't recognize him. I'm like, who let the bad guy from the Power Rangers in? Because he's kind of looking like that guy.
Yeah.
But he was super cool. We had a lot of fun in Vegas. And Junie's a good dude. And it sounds like he's got a good head on his shoulders. And he's getting it together.
He definitely is above 200 pounds probably by now. But he says he went to goes to Jackson, still fucks everyone's up in jiu-jitsu. Like, he has a lot of skill. If he actually got it together, he says that they offer him a lot of fights still. But the fights that they're offering him are like, they give him, hey, $1,000 to fight a guy who's 19-0 from Brazil. And he's like, no, like, I'm not doing that. You know, I want to actually, if he fights someone, he wants good money, and which makes sense. Now, let's get to you, because you are, first time I met you actually was here. I was doing comedy, and you came by yourself and sat in the front. And I was like, who is this guy? But you were very respectful and you were very likable. And I'm like, I automatically liked you. I made fun of you. But I don't know. I liked you right away. And then when you smiled, I noticed your tooth was gone. I had the time a tooth missing as well, because I have a fake tooth from getting hit by a car. By the way, how have you ever put a flipper in or tried to fix that?
I did. And I actually just lost my flipper.
Really?
So I can't get a new one because I still think it's somewhere in my room. But yeah, I lost it. And I kind of started taking it out after the Ultimate Fighter. The first season, I would actually put it in for some interviews and take it out. That was just kind of a joke for me.
Right.
The little things make me laugh.
So let's talk about you. So growing up, you grew up in Toms River, New Jersey.
Howell, New Jersey.
Okay. Is that, now, did you know Frankie Edgar growing up?
Yeah, actually, when I was a senior in high school, he still wrestled in college. We had the same wrestling coach off-season, elite wrestling, a guy named Steve Rivera. And he called Frankie in to kick my ass. I got maybe the first takedown on Frankie, and then he proceeded to just beat the shit out of me for it. And then a few
but
years...
But he was in college. You got a takedown on him. And you were in
high school. I got one. It was the first one. He was probably, you know how it is. You sneak one in. I snuck one in. Yeah. And then I think he got like 23 more to me. And I'm heavier than him, too.
That happened to me, actually, recently. I went back to high school that I used to coach at. One of the kids I used to coach took me down. He was like a junior now in high school. And then I was like, all right, now it's business. That happens. These high school kids can do that. They can definitely sneak one up on you. But you must have been feeling pretty good when you got a takedown on Frankie Edgar.
Oh, I felt great. And I didn't know how good he was until after he proceeded to beat me up. Because, you know, he was in Clarion, and I just knew my coach held him to high regard. And then after that, I saw he was a stud. And then eventually he was starting fighting, and I asked my coach where he was fighting.
So when did you start wrestling?
I started in fourth grade.
Fourth grade. And was that the only sport you did in high school? Or
I threw the shot put a little bit in middle school.
Nice.
Then a bunch of black kids came on the team, and I couldn't beat them. like I had potential for the next year, but then these athletic basketball player kids came on, and they were breaking the school's all-time records, and there was no future at shot put for me.
Now, in high school, were you a popular kid? Did you get the girls? Were you kind of a nerdy guy? What were you like in high school?
I was always kind of quiet. I wasn't a nerd because I wasn't well in academics enough to be a nerd. I was always with the rough crowd, and we would just I always tried to do things that were funny, and that would make me laugh. Like, all right, one time I snuck out in high school so I could proceed to walk to my friend's house so we could sketch me out in chalk, and we stole his dad's police tape and taped off a part of the road, and we would camcorder cars coming by to see what they would do.
And what did they do?
They would either run away, some of them would sneak real close, some people would come.
There was like a dead body there?
Yeah, it was me traced out. Just retard kids.
All right, so you did that in high school. Now, did you have girlfriends? Did you get laid at all?
Yeah, I got laid. I mean, it took me a little bit at first, but once I picked up at the ripe age of 17, you know,
right,
I kept it going.
And how'd you do wrestling wise?
I was a good wrestler. I think I mentally lacked the edge or confidence because I would always lose to kids who one of the kids I lost to who won state I lost to by a point in overtime. I would always lose to them by a point or
two. Did you make the state?
No, I got knocked out in the regions, Region 6 in Jersey.
Region 6, do you take second in regions, third in regions?
No, I got knocked out, and actually the kid who knocked me out in third ended up winning state.
I know that. That was like the nationals. I lost to a kid who took third. Now I got knocked out in nationals, and I was so pissed because then he lost to the kid who took first. It was one of those things in my high school was so stupid. If you lost to a kid and that kid won, you got to advance. So Blair Academy was the number one team.
Of course.
So everyone would hope to get a Blair kid. And in one national finals, Blair had every kid. It was like a dual meet for them, except for one kid that like didn't make it. I don't know who that kid was. I'm sure he got teased. But it was like, this is ridiculous. But they had a lot of post-grads, so that really wasn't that fair. A lot of kids that should have been freshmen in college
get an
extra year of high school to get into a better college, which didn't make any sense to me. But
I wrestled like one of those kids. What was it? The other school like Blair that's really good in New Jersey slips my head right now. It's another one where they recruit, and again, lost by a point. It was a mental thing.
So did you end up going to college?
Yeah, I did community college. Didn't have a wrestling team. I got like half a scholarship. Still not enough to pay for college, so I decided to start fighting after that.
Are you an only child?
No, I got a brother and a sister.
How old are they?
Sister's like 40-something.
Oh, she's way older.
Yeah. I'm third marriage, baby.
Oh, you're third marriage. So are you the only child from that marriage?
No, my brother's a year older than me.
Oh, okay. Are you guys close, you and your brother?
Yeah, we're close. He's super smart, and I'm just... I'm the tank, and he's the think tank.
Did he beat you up as a kid?
No. I was always the brute growing up.
So you beat him up?
Well, he got picked on a lot because he was really smart, so he's very socially awkward. Like, he's Mensa smart, like genius. So that makes you
socially awkward. Did you stick up for him at all?
Of course. I used to always fight the older kids when I was younger.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's how I got into fighting. I just liked it, and I had to
do it. You beat up the kids or pick it on your older brother.
Yeah, yeah. And we'd get in the scraps together. And
nice.
Hell yeah. So it was definitely hard to see my brother get picked on back then, but it definitely made us who we are.
So you go to college. Did you finish community college?
I did 4 years, and then I retired.
4 years of community college?
Yeah. Then I retired.
It was supposed to be 2 years?
Yeah.
You did 4 years?
Uh-huh.
Did you kept failing community college?
Yeah, well, I would have fights, and then I wouldn't do any of the homework those last few weeks.
Now, when were you training mixed martial arts back then?
I had my first pro fight at 19, so right after in the middle of my first semester of college, I started.
Now, did you
fighting.
Take a jiu-jitsu class or go to school for there out in Jersey?
It was in New Jersey, Brookdale Community College. I just asked my wrestling coach. I said, hey, Frank Edgar's fighting. Where's he fighting? I want in. So I joined the fight team he was at, Rhino Fight Team. And 6 months later, I was fighting.
Wow. Now, you walk into this Rhino Fight Team, and Frankie Edgar's there.
It was just a bunch of brutes from New Jersey, and I was super intimidated. Big Jack dude, prison dudes, like.
Really?
Yeah, like fight team.
And you're a 19-year-old kid.
Walking in, everybody's got tattoos. I don't got a tattoo.
Do they have instructors there?
Yeah, we had a good group of instructors. We had a jiu-jitsu coach. Was more of a catch wrestling, grappling coach. We had a striking coach, a mixed coach. We were kind of like a Pat Miletich gym. The guy, Rob Guarino, mimicked the Pat Miletich gym.
So you guys have like open sparring and stuff?
Yeah, it was kind of like any, you know, it was like if you were good at wrestling, you taught wrestling. We had a black belt show up. So we were just a bunch of guys who kind of mixed in and everybody kind of knew a little bit
of
everything.
But you must have got your ass kicked at first.
Oh, yeah. I remember I went against some guy who's getting ready for a Muay Thai fight day two. Go spar him. But he's got a fight, so don't hit him too hard. He beat the shit out of me.
But did you know any Muay Thai at that point?
No. I was just like, okay, I'm supposed to fight him.
So you go in, there's a Muay Thai guy. You have some high school wrestling experience.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've never thrown a punch in your life at that point? Or except for when you
went
to school?
I went to the PAL a few times.
PAL.
Yeah.
So they had boxing there?
Yeah, they did boxing. I tried that for a few months younger, but no real experience. They didn't.
And you're going up against a Muay Thai. Did they have belts in Muay Thai?
He was getting ready for a Muay Thai fight
and now
in New York.
And now is he going all out against you?
Oh, yeah. He beat the shit out of me. He was light heavyweight.
And then at that point, like I remember I sparred like one time at New York Sports Club in the boxing class against a professional boxer, and my head hurt.
Yes.
The rest of the night, for like 3 days, I had headaches. Now, I mean, you must have...
Headaches.
Complete headaches.
Headaches.
Now, at that point, are you like, what? Maybe I shouldn't do this?
No, I came back the next day. The headache subsided. And then I went and sparred. The headache came right back.
Now, okay, so now you have your first fight. Amateur or just pro?
My first fight was pro. I fought a guy named Mark Stevens. He was on one of the Ultimate Fighters.
Okay, so you fight Mark Stevens. And how do you do against him?
Did good. I actually got soccer kicked 4 times in that fight.
Soccer kick?
Yeah, yeah. I shot in for a shot. He kicked my ass the first round. Then I shot in the second round. He soccer kicked me 4 times in the middle of the shot. The ref separates us and puts me in the corner. I said, hey, why'd you stop the fight? I'm still good. I could still fight. He's like, you got soccer kicked. Take a minute. And I'm like, no, I'm doing good. His foot's bleeding. I didn't realize it was coming from my teeth. So I was like, oh, his foot's bleeding. Then I feel, oh, all right, it's my teeth. They're loose.
So, okay, so he loosens your teeth at this point. But you end up winning that fight. I'm looking at this thing.
It was
April 22nd, 2006. You end up winning this fight.
Yeah, they take a point from him. And then I saw he was tired. He went all out in the first round. And then I won the second round, and then I won the third round. At some point in the third round, it was in ropes. I remember I didn't know I was winning, didn't know if I was losing. Remember, I just grabbed the ropes. I was so pissed about that soccer kick. Grabbed the ropes, and then I put his elbow right into it with the rope there. I just was strangling him with the ropes. But I hit it under my body. So
you trying to choke him with the rope?
Oh, yeah, like this, like a little gi choke, but I never had the gi.
So you win this fight. Now, do you get paid for this fight?
Oh, no, I sold enough tickets to pay for medicals. A real professional.
Oh my God! Now your parents at this time, right? Are they with this, or are they? Do they come to the fight? Do they support any of this?
Yeah, they're not very supportive of it.
And they're probably like, go back to community college. You went 4 years.
Yeah. That's not for you.
You never finished it. Are they telling you to do construction work or something else?
They're like, you need to get into sales or something.
Okay.
Every time I come home, I get that talk of like, hey, you know, you're wasting your life, or you're not that good. So
I noticed that on the show, you said that your parents told you you're wasting your life.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did they must have watched that.
They were all proud, and yeah, my dad's a little bit more supportive than my mom. My dad's pretty supportive.
Do they call you after you win the first fight? Do they call you and apologize and say we were wrong?
Well, my mom's like, oh, I'm never going to talk to you about it again. Then after surgery, it's like a talk.
Right.
Oh God,
Are your parents both Italian?
Both Italian.
Okay.
Well, my mom's an Italian Jew, so.
Oh, okay, so she worries, and she's all right. So then you're fighting Mike Schneck.
Mike Schneck.
That was a month later. Not even a month. That was actually 3 weeks later. You fight Mike Schneck, and you win that fight, too. Who's Mike Schneck?
Just some guy. It was his first time fight. And they're like, Tom, this is who you're fighting. And he was actually pretty tough. He never made it.
He never. Well, he was you want a split decision. So now you're 2-0. Now, are you thinking you're the best fighter in the world at this point?
Absolutely. Why isn't Dana White calling me up?
2-0. I mean, the Ultimate Fighter is probably in season one at this point, or two, or...
I think it was in three, but I wasn't even 21 yet.
You weren't even 21. Now, are you getting any pussy out of this, or any chicks actually coming to these fights? Any ring girls? Or is there anything you're getting out of this fight other than winning?
A couple of $100, and I thought I was rich with that. We peeled a couple of ring cards of girls along the way.
You said you peeled?
Pulled.
Now, are you living with your parents still?
I'm living with my mom, yes. My parents.
Parents divorced?
Yeah.
Okay,
parents. Sometime in high school.
So this is your dad's third divorce?
Yeah, my dad's third divorce.
And your mom's?
First divorce.
First divorce. Okay, so he got you. Okay.
There's a big age gap. My mom's like 14 years younger, so he's.
All
right. My dad definitely.
Why did they divorce? Just. You don't even know?
Yeah. No, I know.
Any cheating involved?
No, it wasn't cheating. Just drinking. Lots and lots of drinking.
From your mom or your
no,
dad?
No, from my dad.
Oh, it seems like, okay, so this is a recurring thing. A lot of drinking, alcohol, and then he, probably charming guy, gets the wives.
Well, he's about 15 years sober.
Oh, good.
It was he lost his job, and he took it really hard, and he picked up drinking as a hobby.
Got it.
And
got
he's it. 15 years sober.
What did your dad do?
He just bullshits for a living now.
But what did he do?
No, he was working for Budweiser for a long time as a supervisor.
And that's why he loses his job because of drinking?
No, uh-oh. He lost it. He had a medical reason.
Right.
And then he didn't realize he was allergic to the bananas. And it's a long story, but he lost jobs because of it. And then he got into drinking after. Like, not even while he was at Bud. He would always have beer, but he'd give it away because he had beer, just something to cope with the problems.
Because
life's hard, and drugs and alcohol make it a little easier.
Right.
Especially, it's a quick answer.
But he's sober now.
He's been sober.
AA, the whole thing?
He did the AA, so you know, he's really was peddling God for a few years.
And that was probably annoying to you because you seem like
There's just no, once they're in the beginning phase, it's like, whatever their AA tells them is right, and there's no opinion involved.
But it's happy. You're happy. He's it's all in the right. And your mom have a job?
Oh yeah, she's very successful. She was actually asked to run for mayor of our town.
Oh, did she run?
No, she doesn't really like the Democrats.
Oh, she's a Republican?
Yeah, she's a Republican.
All right. And you?
I'm a libertarian.
Me too. I like sway. I mean, there are some issues. I'm Republican, some I'm Democrat. I'm not across the board anything.
Well, you know what I noticed? All right, so everybody hates the president right now, or at least everybody who talks hates the president.
Yeah.
Quiet people don't seem to hate him as much.
Right.
But what does a president even do?
It's people act as if their life is any different than it was 2 years ago.
No, we're still getting fucked.
I mean,
I get fucked every year. It doesn't matter what
my income has gone up. I'm not actually saying it's the president. I don't think if Hillary was the president, it would have done any different. I'm just saying the economy is good. I think that's what most people care about. But at the same time, the president does some things that are just like, okay, you know, there are good people on both sides when it comes to the Nazis. Yeah. No, they're not. you know, calling people Pocahontas in front of Native Americans probably isn't the greatest thing. But at the same time, he does things like this tax cut. A lot of people are saying it's a good tax cut. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
We will see.
Tax season.
But I am all for giving people a chance. And he, look, I'm not for the Electoral College. I'm for the popular vote.
Oh, yeah.
The Electoral College is a game. And it was a game developed, what, in the 1700s? I mean, it's a different time now. Why not just have the popular vote? All this would have been everyone complaining. Like, it doesn't make any sense why the guy with the most votes doesn't win. But anyway, back to you. So now you fight another August 5th. You fight Anthony D'Angelo. You lose by armbar in the first round, 1 minute into it. Now at this point, are you crushed? Do you see this coming? Were you prepared for the crushed?
Crushed.
Yeah, because you couldn't see yourself losing.
Not at the time.
Are you still training with the animals over in Jersey?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I was training with them till the team split up, and that was about 2 years in.
Now, jiu-jitsu, were you prepared for the armbar? I mean, were you seeing it in practice?
I was actually, like, got to jiu-jitsu and I was really good at it in the beginning. Well, still am, but, like, I got good at it fast. It was kind of the thing where I was in it and then I just kind of settled. And then it wasn't tight and then it got tight sort of thing.
So now, looking back, you're like, okay, when something, motion would have prevented that?
Yes. And most of my losses came in the beginning. I was overconfident in my jiu-jitsu. I'd be like, oh, that's not tight. He can't get it. And then I'll hang out in that position. It'll get tight.
I think that's a wrestler mindset. You know, I think that for me, the reason I tore my ACL was because wrestling, you're always told to toughen out of everything.
Yes.
Okay, don't give up. Get off your back. Move. Okay, dude, it's just constantly push. Sometimes in practice, jiu-jitsu, you as a wrestler, you're like, I can get out of this. I can get out of this. I can toughen up my... And then pop, snap, this, that.
You're always pushing that line.
Yeah, always pushing that line. And then I learned the long way. But now you come back. You got your first win. You fight Corey LaPlante 2 weeks later. So, I mean, now you've had 4 fights in 3 months. Your first 3 months of fighting ever, you have no amateur, you go pro, you have 4 fights. Is anybody telling you to slow down?
No, because we wrestled 2 tournaments every weekend.
Right, so this is just like, and then you
win by...
You're
supposed to compete.
And you win by rear naked choke. Now tell me the difference between winning by decision versus actually submitting somebody.
I think I got like an extra $100 for pulling that off, $200, which I thought was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I made $400 this fight. I win one of these, I could go on a cruise or something.
Do you have any other job at this point?
Yeah, I was working at a horse farm, I think, at the time.
A horse farm?
In New Jersey, yeah.
What were you doing there?
Cleaning paddocks, you know, shoveling shit.
Really?
Yeah. Mowing lawns and...
Did you get along with the horses?
Yeah.
That must have been a kind of cool job.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Sometimes they'd bite a little, but...
Horses were biting you?
One or two.
Where'd they bite you?
Like, you'll be in their stall trying to change their bucket, and they'll come up and they'll just nip you like a dog. They're like big dogs.
That's pretty awesome.
So you got to punch them.
No, come on.
Yeah, you're supposed to hit the horses if they bite you.
Really?
So they know not to hit.
Where do you punch them?
Right in their face.
Come on.
Right in their fucking face.
That's animal abuse.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
You're supposed to smack their ass.
Really?
Yeah, we got to give them a good hit because you don't want them going around biting people.
I had heard that Roberto Duran knocked out a horse. That was like the urban myth. I'm not sure if it happened or not. But,
I bet he did.
Really?
I bet he did. He probably got it right on the button.
But now you win your next 2 fights by rear naked. Well, next one against Jose Solsana, and then Nate Lamott. You win by. So now you're on top. You're 5-1 at this point.
Yep.
I mean, you're killing it. Now the guys you're fighting. Do you feel like these guys are competitive or
some of them mixed bag because it's still early? You know, you get who was in front of you. Like Nate Lamont, I think, was 3-1 and I was 4-1 at the time. So he was the guy doing the same thing in Massachusetts as I was doing down here. So it's like they matched you up more accordingly. I think back in the day, it was fighters fighting fighters. I think right now, sometimes you see on the local level, guys fighting cans.
Right. Now, do you have a manager setting this up?
Just our coach, and I had a manager who was like taking 33% too.
No way.
Yeah, he had us all on there.
When did you find out that you can't do that? When did you tell him you can't do that?
Well, we found out we were getting fucked.
33%?
Yeah.
Fuck.
We were just like a bunch of Motown singers, you know, just getting taken advantage
of. Now, is Frankie in your gym at this point?
Yeah, he was getting taken advantage. We had to go to Kate. We had a case with the New Jersey Athletic Commission, and we got our contracts overturned.
Now, are you training with Frankie?
Anymore?
No, back then.
Back then, yes. I trained up till about after my Igor Gracie fight.
Now, at this point, Frankie's a star.
Yes, he's rising. This is about the time he beat Tyson Griffin.
Okay, that was a great fight. Now, how do you do against him in the room?
Frankie's good, man. Frankie will punch you three times for every one time you throw out there. I would give him trouble, but we knew back then Frankie was going to win the world title.
Who else is in the room at this point?
There's a former UFC fighter, Chris Liguori. He fought in UFC 45 against the guy Keith Rockell. So he was, back then it was before UFC 100, so he was like a big fish back then. Guy named George Sullivan.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, he's getting ready to fight again.
What happened to him? He kept testing positive for shit, right?
He disclosed something to USADA, and it was on the banned substance list. Something with a supplement, too, just like Lyman Good got popped for that.
Right.
Luckily, Lyman Good apparently won a court case, and I think he's made some money.
Oh, good.
Yeah, apparently you're putting these supplement companies in check.
Good. So now you beat Nate Lamott. Now you go into a two-fight losing streak. Both the submission. You fight Chris Reedy and Doug Gordon. And this is 2007. This is your ninth fight in a year. But now, at this point, are you, you know, you lose two in a row. You never lost two in a row before. Are you starting to second guess anything?
Yes. Well, no. I was 5-3, which is a big sway from 5-1. But I knew I made a mistake in both of them. Again, both submission. Leaving myself in the submission too long. I've noticed that. Don't assume you're safe. Even at a half attempt, get the fuck out of it.
Now, what belt are you at this point?
Even belted.
You weren't even belted?
No, we didn't do gi at the time. But we did submissions. We did grappling.
All right, but then you go on a four-fight tear. You fight Scott Argat, Brian DeMuro, Igor Gracie. Is that a Gracie?
Yeah, that's Henzo's nephew.
Henzo's nephew. So this is a big win against Igor Gracie, right?
Now, granted, it was his first fight at the time, but he was supposed to win. They picked me for that match. I got the memo. I was supposed to be the opponent. But I really didn't get the memo. I went in there and I put in work, and we put in a really good camp. And it was before I was even a white belt. That was a good fight for me.
Now, where is this fight?
Atlantic City, Tropicana.
Atlantic City. And are all the Gracies there?
Henzo was in this corner. There was a couple there. Gregor Gracie fought that night and got knocked out. So it was
a bad night for Gracie.
It was a bad night for Gracie. Actually, he got knocked out by the guy I lost to, Doug Gordon.
So you look over, you see Henzo in the guy's corner. I mean, at this point,
I knew Henzo was going to be in the corner.
But I mean, is this surreal to you? Because if you're looking in the corner, you're seeing.
Well,
Henzo.
Frankie Edgar was in my corner.
Oh,
so,
okay. So you got Frankie in your corner.
I got Frankie in my corner, and I remember getting in the, being in the locker room, like, man, I'm gonna fuck him up tonight. This is gonna be my night. And before that, there was definitely times of doubt throughout the training camp because, you know, everybody wants to believe the myths and the legendary Gracie name. And it's hard. Even talking with people can be discouraging at times. But it's important to remember that everybody's human and acknowledge the work that you have done and not your opponent.
Now, are you getting, like, emails from Brazilians saying you're gonna fucking lose, or your Facebook, or
no, that was MySpace time.
Oh, was it? I mean, I'm like MySpace, or people telling you like you're not gonna beat the Gracie and this and that, and he's gonna submit you and all this stuff.
Not so much. It's more like locally, you know, at fights and stuff. That it's a tough matchup. Oh, you're fighting the Gracie. Blah blah blah. It was more hearsay than you see online now.
Did they do the Gracie train?
Yeah, they did. The Gracie
did, to
train.
Come out, really?
Yeah.
Did you have the Edgar train?
The Edgar train. No. We were more like one of those side carts. There's just like three of us.
Now it went to a decision. Now, did you think in your head like, oh, they're gonna give it to him?
No, I. It was like one judge gave me 29, 25, or 26.
Oh, you just dominated him the whole time.
The second round, I landed like 100 punches in the round.
Ground and pound?
Ground and pound. The game plan was stay in half guard, don't pass, don't do anything, don't initiate anything. If you're in guard, get to half guard, stay, pin him down, punch.
Why do you want to pass?
We don't want to initiate any sort of scramble. Just pin him down in half guard and pass if we hit the ground.
You never hear that anymore. As people always say pass every time it goes to the ground. You never say actually stay in half guard.
Yeah, it depends on who you're fighting. We didn't want to. There was a time I could have mounted him in it because he was dead exhausted in the third. And I remember I was going to mount him. I put my knee over and I remember I called her, get back to half guard. Get back to half guard. And I would put it back and continue.
So you went
to
from
punch
mount
again.
To half guard.
I went from almost mount back to my half guard. I was getting my leg over ready, and they were like, nope, get back.
Were you whispering Sakuraba the whole time or no?
You know what? I kind of kicked myself a little bit for not getting that mount like Sakuraba, because that means a little bit. But yeah. I went back and like, all right, let's win this fight.
No, absolutely. So then you beat Doug Gordon. I mean, you're killing it at this point. Then you go fight Rich Ashkar. This is the first time you ever lost by punches. Third round, what happened there?
I just got put in a bad position, and I would scramble, get punched more, and then I didn't stop fighting, but the ref's like, you had enough.
Now, okay. Now, during this time, are you still shoveling horse shit for work?
No. I actually switched camps, and I went with Kurt Pellegrino at the time, and it was probably the worst move I made in my career.
Going with Pellegrino?
Yeah, because he wanted to open a jiu-jitsu school where he made money. Instead of run a fight team like he was proposed to us. So he scooped up a lot of good fighters in the area because our team dismantled and destroyed a lot of careers.
So you went over there. You were thinking it was going to be a fight team. Instead, it's a jiu-jitsu school.
It's a jiu-jitsu school, and that's when I first put on the gi.
So you're not training fighting anymore?
We were doing jiu-jitsu with like an hour of fight team practice at the end.
And how long does that last for?
I did it for about 3 years. 4 years until I had enough and went and found a new place.
Where was the new place you found?
Team Quest.
Ah, so after that, you go out to California.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't stick around and destroy my MMA career.
But you're still like, I see. Okay, so when you fought Dom O'Grady and Chris Kennedy, were you at Team Quest or Pellegrino's?
Pellegrino's.
Okay, so you're still winning fights.
Chris Kennedy, I went to a team, the Bomb Squad in upstate New York for that.
Okay, with John Jones.
With John Jones, when he was there at the time, yes.
What was it like training with John Jones?
He was cool. I like John. John's a cool cat. We actually went out for my, he took me out for my 23rd birthday out there.
So we coke and strippers and
we almost got into a street fight and John thought
this
it was.
Is in Binghamton?
Ithaca.
Ithaca.
We almost got into a street fight. Somebody messed with John Jones. And then Jersey came out of me and I got in the guy's face and John's like, wow, that's the first time anybody's ever done that for me. What? And I'm like, what? Had your back in a scrap? Like, yeah, come on. We're going to have some fun.
Why would anyone want to fight John Jones? What happened?
We were just hanging out at a bar and somebody just got a little liquid courage.
This story sounds a little far-fetched.
No, a little liquid courage.
I had heard John Jones would go up to people and be like, I'm going to fuck your girlfriend tonight. Like, is that what happened?
This was a pre-Jackson's John.
This was humble John.
This was humble. This is a boy who was actually... the outsider in Bomb Squad, a lot of the guys kind of had him on the outside, and he wasn't welcomed.
Really?
Not by the coaches or anything, but by the team.
Who was on the team?
There was a guy named WEC guy, John Frenchy, and they would fight a lot, and he was the popular one, and John was kind of the outsides. And
John Frenchy was a popular guy?
Yeah, John Frenchy was the popular
guy. Wow, talk about backing the wrong horse on that one, huh?
Yeah, and then... A lot of the team would follow him, and John was on the outside. Although, Leone was on the team, not that Anthony Leone. He's
okay.
A New Yorker.
Aljamain Sterling on the team at that point?
He was a youngin' then. He would come in as a wrestler and come in and work with us.
Okay.
So that was before he started MMA. That was his first taste of MMA.
Okay, so did you and Jones train together?
Yeah, yeah.
You guys sparred?
We didn't get to spar hard. We would do a lot more wrestling and grappling.
How'd you do against John Jones? You tap him?
I caught him once in his living room on my birthday because he was talking shit to me.
Okay, and you guys he's talking shit to you. You guys, what, move the furniture?
No. Well, that got moved in the middle of us. He just attacked me, we're going, and he's like, oh, that rubber guard ain't shit. And we're knocking things over, and he's like, I don't care. This is my house. I paid for him. And I forget what I pulled. I pulled a go-go plot off on him. And
any taps?
Yeah, look at
you. You're the first guy to tap John Jones. Everyone here, MMA Roasted, Tom Galicio tapped John Jones. Let everyone know. Put it all over the internet. Now, when he tapped, was he cool about it, or was he like...
He talked a little shit. John was a cool guy. He was funny. He was like, you know... Just a shit talker, just an everyday guy. Like,
I actually met him like right when he beat Bonner, and he couldn't have been nicer. He was
that was about the time I was with him when he beat Bonner, and
super nice, friendly, charismatic. And then I don't know if he changed or if the illusion of him changed or the perception of him changed, but it wasn't the Jones of like I will literally kill you. It wasn't the guy that fought with Cormier and all this stuff. It was a different guy.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he was a kid who didn't really have nothing, and you got, what are you, a champ by 21? I mean, that's a lot to lay on him.
Did his brothers train there too?
No, I never met any of his brothers, but he told me they were just phenomenal athletes.
Oh, yeah, great wrestlers, football. Now they're in the NFL.
Yeah, he said one of them would be a really good fighter too. I forget which one.
Now, okay, so now you're fighting Rick Hahn, 2010. At this point, you living out in L.A. or in Temecula?
No, it was about the time I got back with Kurt Pellegrino's gym.
So Rick Hahn, by the way, great judo guy, right? I mean, amazing judo. Are you training judo for him? Or are you prepared?
Not as prepared as I should have been. I went back to Kurt's gym, which was a mistake, but... Yeah, I got my... there was some point in the first round where he judo threw me and I got slammed on my head. I remember just seeing double for the rest of the fight. And then I remember going back to the hotel with a big headache until I puked.
Have you ever been judo slammed before?
It was... I didn't really land on my back. I landed on my head. My corner said they had a moment where they just looked at each other and went, ooh.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Now, is Pellegrino in your corner?
No, he didn't come out for that fight. I got one of my teammates.
Seems like you and Pellegrino didn't leave on great terms.
No, it was never great terms, and I was always the one second guessing it. He was kind of a dictator.
Yeah. I remember him and that Nate Diaz fight when Nate put him in a triangle.
He was doing good against
Nate. And then flexed. That was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
Gave the middle fingers.
Yeah. That was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. But then you win three in a row. You beat Reggie Pena, Aaron Meisner, Len Bentley. You know,
that was all the tournament, actually. That was the M1 Global tournament.
Did you win that tournament?
Yep, I won the U.S. tournament. I had the toughest guy every round. They would always put the toughest guy.
Where was this M1 Global tournament?
They did four tournaments, one in Asia, one in Eastern Europe, one in Western Europe, and one in the U.S.
Where in the U.S.?
This was done in Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, M1 Global, which is a Russian organization.
Yes, the U.S. tournament.
How do you get involved in this?
They said, we want Tom.
Really?
Yeah, they found the good guys around the area. They wanted me. They picked Aaron Meisner. He was the Philly rep. I was the Jersey rep. Len Bentley was, I believe, Oregon. And Reggie Pena was Florida.
Wow. So you win this. How much money do you win in this thing?
Oh, shoot. I was a thousandaire from winning that. I maybe won about $6,000 total.
You won $6,000?
Yeah.
Which is still more than you ever made, probably.
Yeah, the fights were like one and one. I won the finale at $1,500.
You win a tournament with the toughest guys, and you win $1,000, one to fight, one to win?
Yeah.
Wow. That's not good. But at the time, I guess 2010, that still doesn't seem very... but do you have a big trophy?
I got a glass trophy.
You got a glass trophy. And now, are you working any other job at this point?
I thought I made it. I'm like, I won the M1 Global U.S. tournament.
Are you living by yourself?
Yes, I was. I was living with an ex at the time.
An ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
But how are you paying rent at this point?
With that money.
With that money.
And I was actually personal training.
Personal training. Okay.
Yeah. I was personal training at that
time. And if you're living with a girl, was it a serious girlfriend?
Yeah, at the time. And thank God I seriously got out of it.
What happened there?
Just not a good relationship.
Was she hot?
She could have been hotter. You know what? She was pretty hot, and then she got comfortable.
I hate when that happens.
Oh, yeah. She got comfortable.
I've had girls do that to me, It's just like, it's not what I signed up for.
And you, it happened so gradually, you don't notice.
You don't notice until you look at pictures of how they used to look.
Until you notice.
Yeah, like, then you're like, what happened here?
Then you're like, I got to stop taking you out to public.
Well, not that, but they're always like, I need to lose weight. And then you're like, you know, in the beginning, you're like, no, you don't. You're fine. You're fine. Then you just stop answering. And you're like, or you go, well, if it would make you feel better, like you try to phrase it where it's, you're not a dick, but you're like, you need to lose weight. We all need to lose weight, or something where everyone, you know, because you don't just say yes, you do. That would be no blowjobs forever, unless she's into that kind of thing. But yeah, so then you're fighting Shamil Zavarov. The guy just sounds like a maniac.
He's actually Khabib's training partner.
Oh God, where'd that fight take place?
It took place in Moscow, Russia. If you fight for M1, let them make sure you fly out before 3 days before the fight.
Is that what you? That's when you did it?
They flew me out 2.5 days before the fight.
And how long is this trip?
It was like a 3-day trip.
I mean, it was like 20-hour flight?
Oh, 16, 17 hours.
16-hour flight. Now, what weight was this?
170.
And how much was it hard to cut to 170?
No, not too bad.
So you get to Russia, and do they put you up in a nice hotel?
Or? No, it was very, very nice. It was called the Aquarius. Me and my corner each had a twin-size bed.
Is it freezing?
Yeah.
It's freezing.
Mud everywhere.
Is it like Rocky IV when he gets there and it's like...
Actually, everything was rich.
It was rich.
Oh, yeah. I was the poor guy coming in.
Okay, so you get to Russia. You have 3 days. Now, are you a celebrity in this place? People know you?
No. Nobody knows me. I'm not a celebrity. I had trouble sleeping and I got my shit pushed in.
You end up getting beat up by Shamil Zavarov in this one. Right. Okay. Now, are you getting paid well?
I think I made about $2,000-$3,000. I made about $3,000,
I think. $3,000 to fly to Russia 3 days before.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, could you tell them, hey, I want to fly out 2 weeks before or a week before?
You know, maybe I could have been more vocal with management. I was still young, you know, and there was still a lot of learning. And I don't know if I would have been flown out a week or so later, I mean earlier, would there have been any different outcome or anything? There was definitely things I had to change in my life, and one of them was the camp.
Okay, and you were still at Pellegrino's camp at this point?
That was my last fight.
Last fight, you're like, fuck this.
No, okay. Actually, I had one more after that.
Oh, so then you fight Chris Curtis. Where was this fight?
Philly.
What organization?
This was just a local organization.
You beat up Chris Curtis real quick. Then you're like, I'm leaving Pellegrino, I'm going to Team Quest.
Yes.
Okay, but then you lose two. You lose to Daniel Madrid and David Gomez. Where were these fights in?
One was for M1 in Arizona. That was when I switched to camp, and the other one was locally in California. I was kind of, you know, you lose and you're scrambling to get a fight, and you know, you're just making all the wrong moves. So
no, are you second guessing yourself here? Like, why'd I leave? I lost two in a row.
No, I actually, shortly after that, I tore my knee. Ugh. And I had to get surgery. So it was a rough surgery. I tore my meniscus out. They had to reattach it. And so the big struggle there was if I could do this again. It wasn't like, and it sucks when you get injured, especially with losses, because that's the last thing you remember. Now, not only are you broken, you got to remember that. Like, oh, the last thing I did was lose two in a row.
Now, you walk into Team Quest, right? Dan Henderson's the coach. Now, do they accept you here? Did you have a tooth at that point?
I lost my tooth in fourth grade. I fell off my bicycle.
And so you haven't had a tooth since fourth grade?
I had a flipper after.
Okay, so you walk in with no tooth.
I had my flipper.
Oh, in the flipper. Into Team Quest. Are people nice to you? Do they like you? Are they like, who the fuck's the new guy?
I came about 3 weeks after Ashley Yoder, who's getting ready to, UFC fighter, getting ready to fight on Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah.
I'm sure you talked about that last podcast.
Yep.
So I just got stuck with her. They're like, oh, you go with the girl. You go with the girl. So there was about 3 days of that till somebody turned to me and said, who are you? And then after that, they started working with me, and I started tapping a lot of people out. And they're like, oh, this guy's a really good grappler. This guy's good.
The people know, so no one knows about your M1 experience?
No, I'm just some guy.
Nobody knows anything about you. Why did you pick Team Quest?
They picked up my phone call.
So, yo, you were calling other camps too?
Yeah, I made a list of camps.
So you had Jackson, ATT, AK.
I first called everywhere with fighter housing. So I was trying to get with Duke Rufus. They never picked up my calls, never returned my emails. Then I spoke with somebody about Wanderlei Silva's. He never picked up my calls, didn't return my emails. Then I tried American Top Team. I tried AKA, same story. And then I was discouraged for a while. I was like, man, does nobody want me? Am I just not good? Like, what else is out there?
You have a good record at this point. I mean, decent record.
I don't know. Are you saying
I fought here, I fought there, I fought... I'm trying.
Nobody's even giving me the time to listen, but...
But in the emails, are you explaining who you are?
Yeah, I put everything out on paper. Just nobody's picking up or answering. And I'm second-guessing myself because all I know is New Jersey.
Right.
So I don't know. I wasn't even flying, really, at the time. But I called Dan's gym, and then Heath Sims picked up, and he's like, oh, what's your record? I think I was like 14-5 at the time. I'm like 14-5. He's like, oh, good, amateur, pro, and I'm like, oh, I'm pro. He's like, oh, wow, well, why don't you come out here? I said, sure, when? He's like, whenever you want. We'll have housing set up for you. 3 days later, I was out with no housing set up.
No housing set up.
Nothing was set up.
So where did you live?
I lived inside the Best Western.
So you're paying rent. You're paying hotel fees.
Hotel rent. You know how that goes.
Wow. So that's like $80. It could be $100 a day.
Yeah, it's about $100.
In Temecula, it's expensive because of the wine country and everything else.
Yeah, and I wasn't there for wine.
Right. So you're spending $100 a day out of your own money. Do you have any money saved?
Yes. I was going to open a gym before, and then I was like, you know what? I want to go to a mega gym before I stop, because everybody says once you open a gym, you're done.
Right.
Which I don't necessarily think is true. So
it's like opening up a comedy club. Once you open a comedy club, you're no longer
is that is that really how it goes?
It's very hard. I've seen so many comics open up comedy clubs, and before you know it, they're not doing comedy; they're just running the club, and then they become comedy club owners.
So they're just GMs then.
Yeah, and it's just because it's you're around comedy all the time. You don't want to be where you work all the time, and then also it's just you're more concerned with keeping the roof up open than you are with the actual art of comedy. Which probably, as sure, this gym is kind of a similar principle.
I heard that. Or if you work at the gym where you train, sometimes if you're there all day, you don't want to be there any longer.
So, okay, so now you're living at the Best Western. For how long are you living here for?
About a week till I found a cheaper hotel room.
And Ashley Yoder, is she nice to you? Or I mean, you're not even, she's 115, you're 170. Why are you just working technique with her?
Yeah, we were working technique, and I just got stuck.
But she's hot, though.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, are you crushing on her at all? Or are you like, you know what, I'm not really getting a training partner that's pushing me, but at least I got a hot chick?
Well, yeah, I was there for work, so
right.
I always try to separate the gym and romance.
Okay,
yeah,
I mean, are you going live with Ashley Yoder?
Shoot, it's been so long. I think we were going a little live, but you got to take it easy.
Yeah, yeah, you're pulling your punch. You're not going to knock her out.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's going to hate you at the gym. Who the fuck's this guy? So, yeah. I mean, so you go to Team Quest. At that point, Team Quest is you, Sam Alvey, Henderson's running it.
Yeah, Frankie Lester was there from The Ultimate Fighter, Richie Witts, and they're both from Dan's season. Fernando Gonzalez, he's our longtime quester. He's actually getting ready to fight in this casino.
Bellator, yeah, he's good.
He'll be coming tonight, I think, coming to your show.
Oh, nice. And
I got a crew coming.
Thank you. Hector Lombard?
I wasn't there for Hector Lombard. It's Tarek Safadine.
Tarek Safadine. So it's a good bunch of people, and you're stuck with Yoder.
Yeah, Yoder.
So eventually someone says, hey, why don't you go with... Who's the first person that you went against? People realize you were good.
Fernando Gonzalez.
Okay,
and he's very good too. So me and him had a good round. But he goes to a beat of his own drum. So he was just open to chat with me. And
Do you go live against Gonzalez?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, do you feel like, because sometimes like when I'm even in a boxing class, if I go to a new boxing gym and I see the instructor watching me, I want to kind of put it on and show like that I could act, or wrestling that is there pressure on you to perform?
There was definitely pressure to perform, but Fernando's good. We had a good go. And
did you tap Fernando?
No, Fernando's good.
Okay,
so Fernando caught me first before I caught him.
Okay, but people are realizing though. Like I remember when I went up against Eric Bradley Eric Bradley was like a, he trained with,
yeah, I know Eric Bradley.
Yeah, me and Eric Bradley went, and he was fucking me up, but I was holding my own enough to the point where people afterwards were like, Eddie Bravo's like, who'd you wrestle for? People wanted to know where I wrestled, because I was doing well enough against him.
He's a good wrestler.
Yeah, he was amazing. So was it kind of similar with you, where even you were going up against these big guys, but holding your own, people knew that
No, I was doing really well against the room when I was there, and then especially when jiu-jitsu came, I would also do all the classes too, because I just love doing MMA, especially coming just to the gi stuff. I would do all the classes. So attention was, it was starting to get known. I went with Frankie Lester, actually, and I was catching him left and right, and he ran off Teet Sims. He's like, who is this guy? Why is he so good? This, that, and the other. And then he's like, oh, no, he's got a lot of experience, and he's really good at jiu-jitsu. Then he fucked me up on the feet. So,
yeah.
You know, it was definitely give and take, where I showed them a lot of things, but there was also a lot of me getting fucked up, too. So I'm no hero by any means.
No, but at the same time, you're walking into a new gym. A lot of people who listen to this show have that similar experience of walking in. I mean, you just left New Jersey, everything you knew. Now, did you and your girlfriend break up, or did you try to make it work by coastal?
No, I was like, you gotta go.
You said you gotta go.
Yeah, it was like, you gotta go.
Now, out here, any luck with the girls out here?
Yeah, it took me a little bit to get to the California game.
Yes.
You know, definitely different than East Coast game. But once you just realize they're a little bit dumber, it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Now, were you working at the... Now, you got a job here at the casino?
I originally got a job bouncing.
Here at the casino?
No, at some bar that needed a bar rescue.
Any fights out there? Did you get any fights as a bouncer?
No, but me and Jesse Taylor broke up a lesbian fight.
No way.
Yeah.
Were they going at it?
Oh, yeah. There was like a lesbian gang fight in the parking lot. One group of lesbians beef with the other group of lesbians. And I'll tell you what, I lived with a lesbian... a few, actually.
Michelle Old? Is that you talking about?
No.
I think she's bisexual, right?
Yeah, so she doesn't technically count. She switches teams constantly. Right. So I don't know. And there was another one I lived with, and they're crazy.
Now, Michelle Old, by the way, has been on our podcast. She said she likes taking straight guys and having sex with them in their butt with a strap on. That was like her thing. Were you witness to any of that? Were you around when that happened?
No, I lived with her actually for a short time. But, you know, I lived on the bottom of the steps. No,
you didn't hear any guys yelling in pain coming from her room or.
She didn't really have a guy at the time. I was in there, but in the transition.
Were you there when she was dating Tanya Evinger?
I was after Tanya.
Right.
But she had another girlfriend at the time, so it was that era.
What's she up to? Have you talked to her recently?
No, I haven't got to chat with her recently.
I like her.
Yeah, she's a cool chick.
She is a cool chick.
She's actually really funny. I don't think girls are very funny.
Some girls are funny.
Some girls
are
funny.
Some guys are funny, but I hear
she,
you.
She's a funny chick.
She is really funny. She's got a really good sense of humor. So then you beat... All right, so then finally you beat David Johnson, and you beat Kurt Southern. You fought him twice. Twice in January and then in May 2014, and you beat him with a rear naked choke twice. Why are you fighting the same guy twice?
Because I missed weight by 0.2. It was for the MFC title. In Edmonton, you only get one step.
Right.
So I was first time cutting to 55. I weighed, stepped on the scale, 155.2. And then they're like, you're done. This is for a title fight for Kurt now. If you win, you get a rematch.
So you won, but he still had the belt. Now, were you working for that crazy promoter? What's his name?
Mark Pavlovich.
Mark Pavlovich, yeah.
Yeah, he's like a wannabe.
He's funny. He was telling me, he came on the show, he said he could beat up 80% of the UFC in boxing. I had never seen him box before, but that's what he has a lot to say, that guy.
He's like a wannabe Mark Cuban to me.
Yeah. He,
like a diet. Like.
I liked him, though. I did like him. There was something
he didn't like me.
He didn't like you? Why?
Because I missed weight by 0.2.
Really? And that's why?
Oh, yeah. He's like, if I would have lost the fight, he would have embarrassed me online. He's like, we already got the news article written out.
Oh, my God.
He's like, you saved your job. Ugh. Like, okay, Mark Cuban Jr.
So you beat him. Then you beat Mike Flatch. Where did you beat Mike Flatch?
That's to get into the Ultimate Fighter house.
Okay. You get in the Ultimate Fighter house. But, this is the first time you're on the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
So this is season what?
22. Connor and Alpha Male.
Oh.
Uriah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Now, what do you think of Conor McGregor?
He's a character, man. He's funny.
You ever actually talk to him one-on-one?
Yeah, yeah. He's very respectful, especially if you're a good fighter. He's respectful to you. He was cool, but he's a character, man. Full of energy.
How do you think he does against Khabib if they fight?
I think he does well.
But you know what? I kind of said that too, and I want Khabib to win. I just feel like Khabib has his head up, straight up.
Yes.
Chin straight up, no head movement.
And he comes forward.
And Conor hits so fucking hard.
No one throws a straight punch in that division better than Conor. I think power and speed, and I think he'll be able to plant one of them. He's got 3 to 5 chances, depending on how many rounds there is.
Right. I almost think Ferguson's a harder match for McGregor than Khabib is.
I agree. I think I got crucified for saying that too on Facebook.
I honestly love the way Khabib fights, and I'm a huge Khabib fan. I just thought Michael Johnson was hitting him, and yeah. Michael Johnson doesn't hit as hard as Conor. And you look at, you know, people are disillusioned by the way the Mayweather McGregor fight went, because they forget that it was boxing gloves.
Yeah.
And they forget that McGregor Mayweather is the best defensive fighter in the history of boxing. You know, so then you go, well, he couldn't knock out Mayweather. Yeah, if they had 4 ounce gloves and he didn't happen to, and it was in an MMA fight, he probably would have knocked out. Well, he would have destroyed Mayweather.
He's also he was also working a lot of boxing, so to think his straight punch hasn't gotten better. It's not like he's been inactive. He's just been inactive from MMA. Now, probably his wrestling defense has gone down a little bit, but I think where he wins is that straight shot.
I hate to say it. I don't want it to happen, but shit, Khabib goes. I mean, his chin was way up in the air.
And he was walking forward.
And walking forward, exactly. So then you fight Marcin Raz. That's on the Ultimate Fighter
House?
You lose that fight. And then Andrew McGuinness. What fight? Where was that fight?
That was in Canada.
At MFC again?
No, that was another promotion. It was a one and done.
One and done. Okay. So at this point, you lose two. Are you considering hanging it up?
I had to get surgery after that.
On what?
I tore my shoulder. And a little bit of the bicep, same side that had work on the now.
Now, is this when you start the candy business?
Yes.
So how do you start a candy business? Talk to me about this.
Okay, well, I was broke, and I had money saved up from the Ultimate Fighter, then I had to get 2 surgeries.
You just pay for yourself, or you
have insurance? No, I had it covered, because I injured it at some point on the show, even though I went and fought with injured after that. And then I was like, I'm never going to let this happen again. So I said, what can I start that's I could start with a little bit of money? And then I was
talking about like a little bit of money, $10,000, $20,000. What's a little bit of money?
$300.
$200 or $300?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I find a couple machines. I get them out. And then I go save up a little bit more
money.
What do
you mean you get them out of where? Where do you find these machines?
Craigslist.
Craigslist. Are selling candy machines.
People are selling candy machines on Craigslist.
Right.
So I go. I find some cheap ones. I get 2. I get my first one out. So I get a little juice. So I'm like, all right, I need a little more. So I'd get some money.
What do you mean you get it out? Like you go to a bar? And
I go to a business and I'll say, hey, I run a candy service. You see this break room? It's shit. You don't have any form of food or anything to entertain kids. I'm going to put a candy machine in here for free.
For free?
Yeah, no cost to you. I just keep what's in that, and my service keeps your guests in the waiting room
happy.
And
how much did you pay for this candy machine?
I found one for $50.
$50. So, okay, so $200, $50. Now you have to go stock up with candy, though.
Yeah.
So then that's another $50.
Yeah, about $50.
$100, right? But you're saying whatever the candy comes out is yours.
Is mine.
Okay.
So I keep that.
Now, how do you know that they're being honest?
Oh, I got the keys to the thing. Not everybody's got the keys.
Okay.
I'm the only one with the keys.
Right, okay.
And it's all in my area. So the first businesses I'm approaching are friends.
Right.
You know, people I know to just kind of get my pitch down.
Right.
And some of my friends were saying no.
Okay, so you're like, you need a candies machine. Boom. You figure I can make $300 off this candy in like a month. It cost me $50. So I'll make $250, but I'll come back. So then now I'm making $250 in a couple weeks. Boom.
And it's not a couple weeks. I then realized, no, this candy moves extremely slow.
Okay.
So, like, maybe I'll see my money's worth in 6 months at a slow location, you know, where I make a profit.
Right.
But the idea is to get more out there and make your money work for you. Because I said, I'm 30, I got to start making my money work for me. What the fuck can I do with $200?
Right.
And food stamps.
Okay. And this actually worked.
It's worked. I got 50 out there now.
Now you have 50. Now, do you always let it out for free? Do you always,
I don't charge anybody.
Okay, so you said, you go up to a bar, you say, listen, or a place, hey, this place, people want candy.
Yeah.
I will put this in there, just, I get to keep the candy. And people are like, fuck it, why not? And now you're making, so now with this thing, is it, I mean, we're talking about a couple thousand a month you're making on this thing?
No, I probably clear close to 1,000 a month on there.
1,000 a month, which is still, I mean, $1,000 for doing nothing. I mean, not doing nothing for, now where are you getting these candy machines?
Craigslist.
Always on Craigslist?
Always, I am a Craigslist wheeler and
why
dealer.
Are so many people selling candy machines on Craigslist?
Because it didn't work out for them.
Wow, all right, that's kind of a genius move.
Well, I like to think now the world's famous.
1,000 total or 1,000 each machine? No, 1,000.
No, not 1,000 each machine. I'm probably, with all the machines, I probably clear about 1,000. I got a route out in Orange County.
It's still an extra 12,000 a month.
Yeah.
But you have to get the machine to the places.
It's not hard. I can lift it up. Well, not anymore. But,
so you get a U-Haul?
No, I load them up in the back of my SUV. They're not very big. They're not very,
okay. Now, okay, and then are you stacking it with everything? You're
about
Snickers.
Three selections. It's all bulk candy, so it's those quarter ones. You turn on those.
I'm thinking like you're thinking Snickers vending. And
no, no.
Oh, it's the ones.
I'm the poor man.
Oh, it's the ones, the little ones. It's like the. Yeah, those are disgusting because you don't know who put their hands underneath. But I still eat them. But when you're drunk and stuff, you're like, okay, all right, yes.
Yeah, I do a good job of cleaning them out.
Okay, that's good.
I'm on my shit.
I like it. Okay, now, when you were on The Ultimate Fighter, did your business go up? People contact you?
It did. I wish I would have put a little bit of an on hold, but a lot came at once.
Okay, a lot came at once. Hey, I want a candy machine in my store.
Yeah, a lot came at
now,
once.
Do they require you to deliver it?
I deliver it, yes.
Every time?
Yeah, of course. I ain't going to pay anybody to deliver it.
Right. But what if someone's in, like, Oregon and they want a machine? You're like,
I can only do close to me.
You can only do California. Okay.
I still keep their hopes up. I'm like, oh, maybe we'll come out there one day.
Right.
With no intentions of going to Oregon.
You got to figure out a way to get, like, your face on it. Like if it's a picture of you and then, like, your mouth, like, Toothless Tom's candy.
I actually got stickers.
Because I think that, like, if you have something where it's, like, yours, people know it's, that's just Tom's candy.
Yeah, I actually have stickers made, and I thought I bought them up. They're in my car, so you're going to be getting them at the show tonight.
Good. No, I like
I gave
it.
You a, I bought you a couple stickers
Thank
with
you.
My toothless face on.
And I got you some marijuana, so we're good. now you go into the house, you fight Eddie Gordon. Now, Eddie Gordon, tall, everyone's... Look, when that fight was announced, I love you, Tom, but I was like, shit, this is going to be a hard fight for Tom because Eddie Gordon's so big, so strong, so powerful. I watched him just murder people, and you killed him. You killed him in like a minute. Was everybody shocked in the house?
I'll tell you what, Gilbert actually came up to me after the fight. He's like, hey, thank
Gilbert
you for
Melendez?
No, Gilbert Smith.
Oh, Gilbert Smith, yeah.
He's like, hey, thanks for getting rid of Eddie. That was... Good job, bud. You did us all a favor.
Oh, okay. Because he was worried about him, or
he said that he was one of the guys top on the list that he wanted, that he thought was potential.
Now, did you notice people giving you a different kind of respect though afterwards? Did people start all of a sudden, like, after you took him out in 1 minute, or was everyone like, did people want to train with you more, figure out what you were going to do, or did people? I mean, what was the vibe?
Well, everybody was happy because we were all Team TJ still, so it was like, keep it going. Good job. People who know me weren't so surprised, like Jesse. Jesse's like, I went with him in the tryouts. I think you got him.
Right.
But and then I actually surprised a lot of people in the tryouts, like where they were going. That's actually why TJ picked me. So I was submitting a lot of people in our tryout session. He's like, this kid's pretty good.
Were you surprised that TJ beat Cody?
No.
No.
No, I think I was surprised how he beat him. I knew Cody. I thought Cody would have the advantage standing up. And the first round, it did look like Cody had the advantage standing up. I thought he was going to use that up down, you know, fake the shot, come up strategy to get him down and probably submit him. I didn't realize he would use it to fake a kick and land it.
Right.
And Cody looked like he was pretty hip to knowing which shots were coming with the fake. And he had TJ reaching at times and for him.
I just thought the thing about Cody, I thought it might have been just too fast, too soon. He went from literally being like an unknown guy to all of a sudden beating Dominic Cruz to getting having the fiance to Team Alpha Male to this to that. And I noticed even from my own like texting him, like I wasn't getting any responses back from him. And I'm like, wait a minute, like maybe this might be you start believing your own hype a little bit. And whereas TJ had no pressure on him.
Well, you got to know who you surround yourself with, too. When we were there, Cody was friends with Mike Tyson and had big famous people around him, you know, like Jay Cutler, and was definitely getting that. TJ, besides his team, for his birthday, old college wrestling buddies came out. So it was good to still see him keeping it real. And you got to watch who you surround yourself with. Those people leave you so quick.
So quick.
So quick.
Yeah. Now, 1,000%. You beat Justin Edwards same way. Now, after that, are you thinking to yourself, I got this? Like this?
I was like, all right, it's going to be me and Jesse in the finals. Me and Jesse.
Were you worried about that?
No, that's the best case scenario. Me and I was worried about us not fighting in the finals
because you know Jesse's a wrestler, but he's open to a lot of submissions and that kind of
thing. I've trained with the guy. He's a great fighter, but
you're right.
He's a handful.
So Diego Lima, that was a close fight. That was a close fight. Were you surprised that Diego got smashed by Jesse?
Kind of. It's hard to say because I fought Diego, and I got my shit pushed in a little. You know, I could gladly say I got beat up, but I thought it would have been a little bit more competitive.
Right. Yeah. Then he kills, and so now we're taking us to right here. Now, the UFC said they cut you after that, which I think is bullshit. Okay. I mean, you went 2-2 in your last fights. You beat an Ultimate Fighter winner, and then didn't Justin make the finals, the Ultimate Fighter?
I don't know. He had a good run. He beat Neer, and he beat somebody else.
He beat who?
Josh Neer.
Yeah. Good fight. I mean, you're right there. You lose to James Krause and Diego Lima, but you're a handful for anybody. Were you surprised the Ultimate Fighter didn't pick you up?
Yeah, especially it was at 170 this season. I'm a 55er, and I've been fighting a little heavy most of my career. I think with time, everybody kind of came down and cut weight more. You know, it was different 2006 to 2016. So I've had a lot of success at 55. I thought they would at least give me a shot at 55. And I can't say I'm not bummed. I thought I had it. And I probably would have did things differently if they would have just said, hey, listen, you're cut. Instead of waiting 6 months and sending USADA to my house.
Is that what happened?
Well, USADA came 2 weeks before I was cleared. Everything was cleared. When we called them to look for a fight, they said they no longer needed my services. And what made you think that you were in the UFC? It's like, well, USADA came. My management said, well, USADA was at his house. This newsletter in September said, welcome Tom Galicchio, Diego Lima and Jesse Taylor to the UFC. So there was definitely all signs were pointing that I was in the UFC. And then
so they sent you a letter saying, welcome to the UFC?
It was like in the newsletter. They like had a newsletter that was emailed. I was getting USADA updates every day.
Did you try reaching out to Dana or to Sean?
No, Sean, my management reached out to Sean, and Sean said I was cut. And they're like, we think he's a nice guy, but we got to give someone else a shot.
Fuck that. I mean,
I thought I built up enough fan base and notoriety.
You have a huge fan base, and you're fighting in a weight class above.
Yeah, I mean, Krause is a 55er too. So, I mean, I guess I did technically lose at 55.
But Krause,
I mean, if we're going to be honest with ourselves,
Krause
I guess
is what 8-1 in the UFC or something. I mean, he's
got a good record, and he's definitely a contender. I went in there and fought a contender, which is what I wanted to do. In fact, if I would have won, I would have probably called out Khabib because I'm not in there to not fight the best guys.
But that's ridiculous. I mean, that's so stupid. So now, who's your manager now?
Sam's wife, McKee Sullivan.
Sam Alvey's wife. Oh, the one that was the top model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's so hot, by the way. Anyway, so all right. So you're fuck. So have you reached out to Bellator to PBL?
Bellator hasn't returned my calls or anything. I was hoping to get on this card here before this happened, the injury happened. But yeah, they didn't return any of my calls. KSW was flirting with the idea, but then they decided against it.
That's Poland?
Yeah, that's Poland. And the fans spoke on Twitter. I put it out there, and I wanted to get in that World Series tournament. Ray Sefo didn't return anything. So I think as of now, I'm just going to try to win a couple and get back into the UFC and screw the other organizations. If they don't want me and they're not going to make an offer, it is what it is. I'll fight locally.
That World Series tournament's like $1 million winner or something, right?
Yeah, I thought
that could change your life. All right, so fans, you want the fans to reach out to Ray Sefo?
Well, I think it's a little too late for me to get in that $1 million tournament. I don't know.
At the rate they're going, they're not going to start till 2020. When are you back training?
I'll be back on the mat March 1st. My doctor says that's ambitious, but I'll be back.
March 1st, back on the mat. Okay. All right. And then now last time we worked together in Vegas, you were doing stand-up comedy.
Yes.
Are you working on that? Are you practicing?
Yeah, yeah. I got something coming up in Burbank at Flappers.
Nice.
They're doing an improv show, but they have two comedians. I'll be one of them.
When's that?
The 16th.
Of January 16th?
Yeah, it'd be Tuesday. You'll probably be at the Dime, right?
Yeah, come by the Dime afterwards, do a set.
Yeah.
Or before, or whenever it is.
Yeah, maybe. A little warm-up.
I had a show on, where was it? That was last week. It was actually at the Ice House on a Thursday.
That's a good club.
I love it, but they always put this magician before me. Last time they put a magician before me, the guy had a duck. He put out a real live duck for his closer. And I had to go out there. I'm like, I'm calling PETA, right? That was like my opener because people loved it. This time another magician came on. And I'm like, because no one wants to follow the magician.
Why?
Because they always put me on. It's different energy and, you know.
Aren't the magicians like, isn't that what's frowned upon in comedy?
Kind of. I don't really care. It's just kind of weird because they're having people come up and doing like, you know, sawing them in half or whatever they're doing or picking a card or
it's not like Penn and Teller, so this is probably some magician that's
no, it's a good magician. It's a good, but I went up there and I was like, oh, I used to love magic as a kid, and then he got AIDS. that was my opener, and people were laughing and at the same time shocked and groaning, but I was actually happy with that opener.
So that's
that
a good one. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it was I like got it back to comedy.
What about puppets?
My opinion is, if whatever you do, if you make it work, you make it work. Like, okay. Carrot Top kills it. He's making $6 million a year in Vegas. That's okay. A lot more than I'm making. Jeff Dunham, murdering it. The other guy who won America's Got Talent. You know, there are people who suck at it, though. And the people who suck at jokes. I mean, yeah. Same with singing and impressions. If you can kill it, you can kill it. You know, so.
See, you know what? There is a magician I like, though. There's one magician that like gets to pass with me. That's
Who's
the
that?
Amazing Jonathan.
Yeah, he's good.
He's good. I seen him at Aces.
He's good. He's really good. I was at Aces. I did a comedy there.
I've seen you there at Aces before.
But then I was there when the mic went out. I do an hour set with no microphone there. I did great, and then they didn't call me back. I'm like, fuckers.
That place shut down.
Oh, is that what happened? Oh.
Yeah, they moved it, and then somebody trashed it, and they're like, all right, I've had enough with comedy.
That happens a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad.
It happens a lot. I did a show one time. I was in Northern California, and the guy was going off on Trump. And a Mexican woman stood up and was like, I love Trump. You leave our president alone. And then he called her like a cunt. And then it just almost got into a fight. And then a black guy got mad at him for disrespecting the woman. It was like the most surreal thing. It was like a white guy putting down Trump, a Mexican woman getting offended, and a black guy getting offended that like he called the girl a bitch. It was like, if anything, it shows you how far we're along as a country, where like these are the like people are just people and not really taking, you know.
Everybody's offended, though.
It's so hard. Like, it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. Where like
all the comedians are saying it's harder crowd than ever.
You know what? It's not necessarily it's the phones that kill you, because everyone records it, and then you say one thing, and then they take it out of context and put it online, and all of a sudden that thing, you didn't see the 50, you know, some lady like heckles the whole time, and then you call her a bitch at like you know, minute 59 out of the hour, and that all they see is you calling some woman a bitch, and then all of a sudden your show gets yanked, and like you get dropped, and you lose your sponsors.
Louis C.K. got hit pretty hard too.
Well, yeah, that was, but
I personally, there's been a lot of scandals in Hollywood. This one I don't feel bad about.
I don't feel bad.
Like, you know, he's not, come on.
There's a lot worse. A lot worse. A lot worse. You know, that's the thing. You can't, I don't put it on the level of Weinstein, Cosby,
no.
The other guy, the guy who, the new guy who did that movie, whatever, it was accused of rape. You know, what he did was not nice or cool and, you know, like, respectful and, yeah, and, you know, it was rude, and but not at that level.
I'll still go to a show and I'm still a fan. So it's like, I'm with all the bad things I read it, I was like, oh, just like,
and he did ask.
Hey,
is it okay if I masturbate in front of you? But that's still not what.
Well, they did go back to his room after the show.
They went to his room. Yeah.
I mean, like, come on. Like, all signs. And then he asked. I mean, I think that's a pass. First of all, he asked you to go back to the room.
He lied about it. He said it didn't happen. And then their careers were like, they were like put on blast for trying to take him down. And I think that is wrong. Like, if he would have just said, when they said it, if he would have said, yes, I did that, that was wrong.
What did he say, like a few years before? Because I know what I've been reading, he admitted to everything.
He admitted to it way after.
Oh, okay.
Like, when all this came out. The beginning, he like denied it.
But push comes to shove. Hey, come back to my room after the show. And you're back at the room and say, hey, I'm going to jerk off right now. Do you mind? And they're like, no, well, you kind of didn't really do anything wrong.
Is it appropriate, though? But then he was like, he had a wife that was pregnant.
No, that's wrong.
And then he asked a girl on set, hey, can I jerk off in front of you? And then he was having meetings with writers where he was jerking off in front of them. Like, I mean, the things you shouldn't do.
Well, that, you know what? Maybe all signs point to it, because like a good 60% of his jokes are about
jerking
off.
But when I worked on Playboy, I was the warm-up comic for the Playboy channel, and the guy who was in charge was saying that these two girls, Jessie Jane and Kirsten Price, who were like the hottest porn stars ever at that time, were like masturbating in front of him during the writing meeting. And if they were doing that when I was, I wouldn't have objected to it. Like, but at the other people don't like that.
Well, apparently double standards are wrong now. So,
but they also, you know, he should have said, hey, stop it, put it away. If you, yeah. I don't know, man. It's not something you should do. You know, that's
it's just a weird fetish.
Yeah, so it's
just a weird fetish.
I guess at the workplace that was also, but this wasn't at this was at the hotel. But I think him denying it, and
that's what made it wrong.
That's what made,
and
then,
having a
and
wife.
Then them getting kind of blackballed for it.
Okay,
that's sort of,
yeah, that's kind of wrong.
But I don't know. I hear you though. I hear you. So what do you got coming up, Tom?
Just got my show in Burbank. Gonna get some more candy machines out there. And
so if I want a candy machine in my bar and I live in Southern California, or my club or my restaurant or my house, what do I do?
Find me. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook.
But Tom, how? What's your...
At Tom Galicchio, TomGalliccio. Or you can find us at KO Candy. That's KO Candy. If you can't spell that, you probably don't have a business.
Nice. And okay, so then next week I will be in Arizona at the House of Comedy, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Hit me up if you want comps. Also, I'm at the Dime Bar Monday and Tuesday, and the Laugh Factory this Wednesday night in Hollywood, Laugh Factory. The following Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I am in Seattle at the Comedy Underground recording my new CD. And then the week after that, I am in Calgary at the Comedy Cave if you're in Calgary. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Speedweed. Hope you guys have a great rest of the weekend. Take care. Bye-bye. Trap, sons, and trap, don't sons, trap, don't sons, trap. Түүний сонс тө хөгжим дөр болан. Дагаж дуудан дур болан бууруулаа.